I'm going to take you now into what I'm going to call our primary tool. So if everyone will take out your packet of booklets called Life Issue Booklets, and I want you to pick out number one. Everybody have it? All right, now, you're going to have to trust me on this one, that I have already convinced you that there is a way that for most people that you have an opportunity to connect with that are not Christians, that there will be something you could say to them if you would be trained in how to do it. There would be a tool that you could use, or a couple of different tools that you could use, that would cause somebody or most people that you meet with to say, I would like to meet with you. With an understanding, I'm going to commit to meet with you only 1 week, and I will see if I like it. And if I do, I will then choose to go further if I want to. That's kind of the way it's always, I always do it. Just 1 week, would you like to meet for 1 week and just see? And so, assuming now that I've been able to teach you how to do that, they're saying to you right now, I want to meet with you. Now, what you're going to do at that point is you're going to say to them, well, let me show you the first of the four booklets that I just referred to, because I'm not training you yet how to do that. Are you with me? I'll do that tomorrow. It's an introductory tool. But I've introduced the four booklets and the importance of them and so forth. Now I'm going to say, here's book one. Take it home and do this with it. And I'll train you that tomorrow, okay? So they know what they're supposed to do with it, which includes reading the first six pages, I think it is, that make up the answer to question number one. Read it as hurriedly as you would like. Read it only once unless you desire to read it again. And all I ask you in those first six pages is to use the margins. Meaning, if you read something on this in these six pages, this one about the Bible is God's Word, if you read something and you go, what? Are you serious? He believe. Know this, John, if I'm talking to John, I say, John, I believe what's in here. Right or wrong, I may be wrong, but I believe this is true. Therefore, when you read it and you go, what? You're going to forget 3, 4, 5 days later when we're meeting what you were thinking on which page. So right out beside where you read that, just put Pope-idiot, okay? I always say that. And he smiles, you know, and I say, that's going to remind you he's got to be crazy to believe that statement or that particular thing right there. I say, okay, you understand that? He goes, okay. Now, you see, let's look at the back portion. Comes to the Gospel of John. There are 5 chapters, and now I'm meeting with a lot of people. They don't know Jeremiah from John. They wouldn't know that they're all books of the Bible, you know, both books of the Bible. So I'll say, this is one of the first books of the Bible. It's one of the 4 Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. I might say, John, have you ever heard of those 4? Just to kind of get a sense of where they're coming from. How much Bible or lack of Bible do they have? And I say, this is one of the first 4 books of the New Testament called John. There are 21 chapters, and we're going to look at 5 chapters each booklet, until the last chapter, obviously 6, but it's going to be relatively short, just 5 or 6 chapters. But what I'm going to ask you to do, I'm going to ask you to read a little bit every single day. Then this is what I'll say. John, I don't really care if you read only 30 seconds a day and it takes you 2 to 3 weeks. That's fine with me. Ideally, we'll do this once a week, but you determine how often we meet. But I will ask you this, that I want you to be finished with it by the time that we do meet. And number 2, if you finish it before we meet, I want you to keep looping it and reading a little bit every day. Now, why am I asking them to do that? Why? Somebody tell me. That's that sword. I want them to keep sticking themselves every day. I've got to see them use the very means by which God, by His Spirit, is going to change their heart. I am not going to convince them to become Christians. I can't do that. Their hearts are dead in their trespasses and sins, right? No one can talk the dead into life. Only God can raise the dead to life. So, and he uses the scriptures to do that. So I'm saying, I got to get the scriptures to him. That's my, everything else is just a plan to get him into the scriptures. You with me? Now, I know this, that to the degree I can make it intriguing and interesting, they're going to want to do that. That's where my role becomes very important. Not to convince them to the faith, but to make it intriguing and interesting enough that they'd say, well, I want to keep stabbing myself on a regular basis, okay? So then I said, you see these little questions in the margin? And I'll flip a page or two over. And I said, you see that one, number 3 on page 11 or whatever? I said, now, they're strategically placed because the answer to those questions are immediately to the side of where the question is placed. There's a little verse there. Do you see the one, like on page 9? Everybody turn on page 9 to the first question. It says 1:1,14. John, do you know what that, have you ever been in the Bible enough to kind of know what that, nope, what does that mean? Okay, then I want to explain chapter verses to them, help them understand that. And so that'll take you specifically to the exact spot that you're looking for the answer, okay? Now, I would encourage you, John, you don't have to do this. I would encourage you, try to find the answers and write them down. If you don't want to do that, that's a little bit more than you're asking for, then read the question before you read the text, so that you can at least look for the answer. And then when we'll get together, I can assure you that I will share some things about these questions and answers that will make this stuff come alive to you. So now I'm giving them a little hope, a little interest, right? Deal, John? You ready to go? You want to do that? He goes, okay. Now I'm ready to go. So now I'm having lunch with him. So I meet for lunch. Now, some of you may not be doing lunch. You may be doing a coffee in the morning. You may be meeting at night in their home. You might be, you know, in the neighborhood. I don't know where you'll be meeting, so it's going to be different. But for me, one of the things I want to do is to make sure that I am well-versed on this enough that I can get through in about a 40-minute lunchtime. I can take it to an hour if I need to. If something happens and they've got so many, many questions, and sometimes it happens, I'll split it in two, and I'll say, well, we got this far. Let's pick up and do the balance of this one next week. Want to do that? So that's perfectly fine. There's no sense you've got to be through in 4 weeks. But I'm going to say, John, tell me about your week this week. How was it? Hey, let me know a little bit more about your family. I know the first week we met, when I introduced this to you, I learned a little bit. But tell me a little bit more about your, you mentioned that your child was having a struggle getting in the school that they wanted. You hear anything? Whatever it is, just show interest in them and talk about them. I do not like to get into this. If I'm at a lunch place, which I am 90% of the time, I do not like to do this while we're eating. So I try to make sure that I set a place to meet that I know the service is going to be quick and we can eat hurriedly and get right into this and have plenty of time. So pick your place well, wherever you choose to do it. That's why if you went to a coffee shop or something like that, it's even easier because you don't have to wait, you know, for all the ordering and all that stuff. But I just talk about them and show interest in them. And, you know, people so appreciate that. So few people have anyone ever show interest in their life. And so, and you should be interested in them, all right? These are people that God has created. They're one. Just find out about them. Get to know them, all right? Now, after I've done that and the food's been set aside, then I say, well, let's grab your little booklet here and let's walk through it for a few minutes. Want to, John? Okay, good. And here's how I always begin. What'd you think about book number 1? And listen to what they say. You will not believe what you hear sometimes. I've heard statements like, this was the most intriguing week that I remember in years because of reading this book. I don't read these very. I go back home that night and I start reading it again. I said, what? What was that? And the guy that said that was one of the most rank pagans you'll ever meet. Who, when I got to the end of book 4, he said, I'm not interested because I can't buy anything that speaks against evolution, blah, 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 da, 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 whatever. This man in our church today is one of the most godly men you'll ever meet. Studies the word as much as any man I know in this church, just hungry for the truth of God. Amazing what God did in his life. So that happens. But he just found it intriguing. That's all. Yeah, that was his word. This is most intriguing. But listen to whatever they say. And then I usually like to ask this question. This is about the Bible. Well, John, tell me, as you come into this reading, what was your view, or what is your view about the Bible? What do you think about it? I mean, obviously, I've, you know, agreeing with this, and of course, that's what you'd say. I can say I wrote it, but you can say I agree with this here. You know that the Bible is, you know, God's word, and it's what is called inspired, God breathed, it's without error, and so forth. That's the minority view, I know. What's your view coming into this? And I asked this guy 2 or 3 weeks ago when I met with him for the first time, 2 weeks ago, I said, what's your view of the Bible? He said, good book. You can take some of it to be helpful and some of it not so. I mean, I certainly don't believe in a lot of the stories like a real man called Adam and a real woman called Eve. I wouldn't believe that. And I said, that's great. That's okay. Good. Just want to hear where you are. Now, with that, then I say, any questions that you have on these first 6 pages? Anything you would like to ask about? And if you get the answer of the question, explain, and they give you something, and you go, uh-oh, I never heard that in my life. Then what you say are these 3 words. They're magic words. They get you out of any question that you can't answer. You simply say, I don't know. Do you remember the story I told about the guy that was a Jewish person? Was that on the materials? The Jewish person? He came to me, and there was a fellow, Leighton Ford, who was Billy Graham's brother-in-law. He'd come through every year with a group of pastors and leaders from around the country, and they'd meet in Atlanta, and he trained them in evangelism and other areas. And he'd call me every year. He's retired now, but he'd call me every year, and he'd say, would it be okay if I bring this course that I teach and all the pupils to Perimeter and let them hear about how you share and train in evangelism? So we did it year in and year out. And it might be a group a little bit less than this size right here. And he'd say, would you each time, would you bring somebody that you have witnessed to and let me interview that person in front of all the class? Say, fine, I'd do that. Well, he asked me 1 year, and I think it was maybe the last year that he was doing this. And he said, I said, sure. In fact, I've got a Jewish fellow I'm meeting with right now. I've just started. By the time the class gets here, I may be through. I don't know where it'll be, but how would you like to meet with him? He said, that would be interesting. And this was a very committed Jew. And so I went to my friend. I said, I know we're just kind of in the beginning of this thing right now, but I've got this class coming, and it's a group of Christians like me, and they're training in how to do what I'm doing with you, actually, helping you investigate. Would you be open to coming? And he's a very astute, successful businessman. He said, sure, I'd be happy to do it. Now, I had worked hard with this guy. I mean, hard. I had researched a lot. I dug deep because, I mean, he asked things that, man, I'd never heard before. And so he would typically have a page of typed questions probably every week, maybe 50 a week. Have 50 questions, yeah. So anyway, he comes up and Leighton says, well, thank you for being with us. It's got to be a little unusual and a group of evangelical Christian leaders, and I know you're of the Jewish faith and so forth, but I know Randy's been meeting with you, and could you answer a few questions? Let me begin with this. What most impressed you about Randy as he's met with you? What's been the most impressive thing about your meetings? And he looked up, he said, I can tell you exactly what impressed me the most. Now, at that, I'm sitting in the very back, and I feel, you know, this is embarrassing to have this kind of compliments coming, you know, while you're here, you know, it's just a little, I kind of put my head down thinking, ooh, this is weird. And he said, well, I'll tell you very simply. It's just how little Randy knows. I pop up, I said, what? How little I know? He said, you know what? I came to Randy over and over, week in, week out, and I'd give him all these questions. And, you know, most of them, he had the same answer. He'd say, I don't know. And then you know what he'd do? By the next week, he'd come back with not all of them, but some of them answered. And some of them not answered all that well. But you know what made me want to keep coming? Because it was real. Had he had an answer to everything, and everything slick and done, he said, I'd question him. But you know what? And I'll tell you what, I actually look for times where I say I could give them an answer, and it'd be an okay answer. But I love to be able to say at some times when I meet with them, I don't know, that's a good question. And by the way, if you don't get a good answer to that one, you're just investigating. I'd probably put that on the liability side for embracing Jesus to who he claims to be. This may be one good reason not to. You make the decision, okay? So there's never a pressure. There's never a push. It's never done like that, okay? So then I'll say, could I just give you just a few little thoughts about the Bible? Now, I'm going to give you now what I call, for better use of words, fodder. It's extra stuff if you'd like to share. It's not stuff you have to. You could right now say, well, let's go to John. That would be fine. But there are some things that I find intriguing so that they go, ooh, that's interesting. I like meeting with you because I hear some interesting stuff that I would not have known. So you don't have to use this at all, but it is something you could. Here's one of the things that I do. I take a piece of paper. I always have a pad with paper and a pencil or pen. Because there's certain things I want to show them. And you're going to be learning a few little diagrams that you'll find to be very interesting. But I'll do this. I said, you know, it's interesting. People don't know this. People in the faith that I hold to, of Christianity, they don't even know this. Do you know that every book of the Bible, and there were 66 different books, had what's called an autograph? That means the original. John, did you know that there are no originals left today? We don't have one copy of one original anywhere. Now, what I like to add there is that, you know what? And probably from God's perspective, I could see that it'd be wise not to. We'd have shrines built around something like that. He doesn't want anything worshipped but him. But anyway, that's called the autograph. Well, do you know that what they do is they had these people called scribes. John, have you ever read in the New Testament about the scribes and Pharisees and so forth? Do you know that the scribes, you know what the word scribe actually meant? Scribe actually meant copyist. A scribe just copied. What did they copy? They copied the Bible, the books of the Bible. So they would take the autograph originally, and it would be maybe 3 or 4 copies by one scribe. But the reason I put so few is because the law of the scribes was incredible. Now, I don't know all the detail of the law, but it was something like this. They wanted to make sure that there would not be error in translation, in transcription. And by the way, this is called a, and you might want to write these words down, transcription. Okay? That's a transcription when they copy it. And the reason is because they had to do stuff like this. John, have you ever heard the little verse in John 3? For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. By the way, the guy I told this to last week, he'd never heard that verse. Never heard it. And I said, well, there's a verse that says, for God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten son, and so forth. And so let's say that he's going to transcribe that. Now, I don't know the laws, but it would be like this. Let's put it in English, God. So he'd have to say, G-O-D, 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 and then G-D-O-G, G-O-D. And go back and forth, so, S-O-O-S, S-O-S, 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 S-O-S. Now, boom, 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 boom. Then you keep going. And then when you get to this end, you go back again. And you went over it and over it and over it and over it. It took forever. And the reason that they had these laws so detailed like that was so that ideally there would be no errors whatsoever. And then I say, John, do you think there still were errors? He goes, sure there are errors. I said, of course, because we're human beings. We're not perfect. But it sure eliminated a lot of them, didn't it? And said, and then this person, this one sent to this community, and it's transcribed, and this one to this community, and this one, and this one. And then this thing goes on ad infinitum until you've got hundreds, even thousands of what's called transcriptions in the original language the Bible's written. Now, Christianity has said that archaeology is Christians' greatest friend because we do archaeological searches to go further and further, closer and closer and closer to the original. You remember in the book, John, when you read, it talked about these scrolls called the Dead Sea Scrolls? Yeah, that was interesting. Do you know, John, that I think is the largest single jump backwards we've ever had. And here's the interesting thing, because it's the Bible, let me tell you, there are more copies of the Bible than any other ancient literature. You take the next closest ancient literature, and it is miles apart from Numbers. The Iliad, the Odyssey, any of those ancient writings, let me tell you, nowhere in comparison. And so now what they can do is they can kind of date when these things are, and you can go to different levels, you know, and so forth. But let's say we come way down here, and this is just an illustration, I don't know. I say, let's say that there are 200 or 2,030 copies of this in this general time frame that we found of John 3:16. And so you look at those and you find out, and again, I'm just making numbers up. Let's say that you found out that 2,010 of them all said the exact same thing. And then you found that five of them said, instead of God so loved the world, it says God so loved the Jewish person. And you found two of them that said God so loved the Gentile. And you found, you know, and there were, those are called variant readings, just so you'll know that. You don't have to tell them, but that's called variant readings. And so you look at that and you say, okay, 2,010 of 2,030 copies say the exact same things. Do you think maybe that tells us what this original said? Probably so, right? And so then they come up and they push way back and they find a new one, like in the Dead Sea Scrolls, and you've got the illustration of Isaiah 53 that's in your book there. And I say, that's when we say that the Bible is inspired without error, we're talking about the autograph. And we believe we know where the what the autograph said, because when you found these few 10 or 20 variant readings, you find they're all at the same spot. And you say, oh, that's where it started, right there. And so we pretty much know what the original said. That's what we mean when we say the Bible's inspired, that's original, the autograph, okay? Now, there's one last thing that's the only thing I might share about the whole thing, and I may not ever even go into that. If time is short, I don't even go into it. I go, okay, you don't have any questions? Good. Let's move along. But that's just something, if you'd like to use, just be aware of how you can share that, okay? The only other thing is to let them know this is transcription. There's also what's called a translation. We're familiar with translations. Translations, when you take it from one language to another, right? You translate. And so since the original scriptures were written, most all of it was written either in the Hebrew Old Testament and the Greek in the New Testament, though that's not total, but that's primarily all of, most of it, we have to translate it into our own languages. And that's why you might have two different translators, and they translate it a little differently. When we're talking about inspired without error, we're talking about in its original language. Now we have translations. That's why you can go in your living room and your bedroom and find two Bibles and they don't even agree verse to verse, because those are the translations. Then I might, if it's, they're interested in this, now I might just say, and by the way, you've got then, in addition to the translations, you've got what's called paraphrases. And paraphrases is where you would say, okay, I've got a translation, let's say English, and I want my child to understand it, so I'm going to put it in my own simple words, and you paraphrase it, okay? So that you can understand. That just gives them a little information where they leave going, okay, I think I understand a little bit more about the Bible, okay? Any questions about that? Any questions? All right. I'm going to go just a little quick few more minutes, and then we'll take our break. Are y'all okay just for a few more minutes? Let's go into John here. I want to hit a few of these questions, and then we'll take our break. Number one, I know when I start into John that they're going to find this to be very interesting. I want to be very careful, though, as that I don't embarrass them by what they don't know. They're already nervous. I'm going to ask them questions, and I say, you know, it doesn't matter whether you got all these right or not. I mean, that's not a really interest. So I'll ask you the questions. If you don't have it, that's fine. But I'm going to give you the answer. I want to make sure you get the answer to these questions, okay? But let's just look at this first one. To whom does the word refer? Why is the name used? When I use that, I said, now you won't for sure know why the name was used. You shouldn't know the answer to that. I threw that in as an add-on. But to whom does the word refer? Could you figure that out? And if they go, no, I didn't get that one, I know that I'm probably in for somebody who's not going to have any of the answers, right? I just saw a man come to faith about a month ago, and he came with all of his questions typewritten, all of his answers typewritten, and I declare he had researched some of the best materials. I said, "Where did you get these answers?" He said, "Oh, I got on the internet and I started asking these questions on the internet and began to search them out." And I said, "What sources did you find?" He said, "Well, this one came from." And I said, "Well, that was a good source." And how'd you know that? It's just what popped up on the internet. I don't know. And but he had great answers just by going to the internet on these questions. But to whom does the word refer? And he goes, "Yeah, I was reading that, and I realized I don't want to embarrass him." I said, "Let me just kind of refresh you. It says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and the Word became flesh." Usually they'll go, "Jesus." I say, very good, Jesus. Now, why was that word used? John, you're not going to know the answer to that one. Let me give it the answer this way. Imagine that you and I had been asked to meet together, and we had never met. It was through a mutual friend we would meet. And we've been asked to have lunch together. And so we both show up at the restaurant. We've never met each other, but we've been told what each other looks like. And so I see you because I'm seated first, and I wave at you. You wave at me, and you come sit down. And I do like this, and you do like that to me. I look at you and do like that, and you look back and do that to me. And then we come, and the waiter comes up. We order. And then we sit there, and we look at each other till the food comes. And we eat, and halfway through the meal, we go, good. And then when we finish, we pay our bill and we walk off. And then you see our mutual friend, and your mutual friend says, did you get to have lunch with Randy? Sure did. We had lunch today, in fact. Well, good. Did you get to know Randy? No, I really didn't. You didn't. Why not? Because not a word was spoken. Do you know what the word is? It's the means of communication between two parties. And do you realize that God is one party and we're the other? And God's Son is that link between us. And you're going to see that coming over and over and over as you read through John. That makes sense? He goes, "Yeah, I never understood. I would have never known. No, that's why I'm here." And that's what I'll do. I'll say, "Yeah, that's why I'm here. That's why I'm charged so much money," or something like that. All right, number two. How did the world receive the word? And the answer is not well. But I want to add a little bit extra there. Obviously, they crucified him. But I said, did you know that in the early part of his ministry, they did receive him pretty well? There was a lot of enthusiasm because now there was someone coming to rescue Jewish people. John, I don't know if you knew this, but do you know that the Jewish people were under the occupation of Rome? And they were like slaves to the Roman Empire. And they were looking for a deliverer to set them free. And that's what Messiah. Have you ever heard the term Messiah? Yeah. Well, Messiah was a term used in the Old Testament to talk about a deliverer that would come to set God's people free. And so now, because of their circumstances, they assumed that for them would mean to be set free from Roman occupation. So when Jesus came doing miracles, they went, "Hey, give me a J, give me an E." They were all excited. Until they said, "Okay, Jesus, when are you going to deliver us?" And he basically said, "Oh, from the Romans? Oh, I'm not coming to deliver you from the Romans. I'm coming to deliver you from your own sin." And they went, "What?" And then he said some very repulsive things like, "Unless your righteousness is better than the scribes and the Pharisees, you won't go to heaven." That was him saying that the most religious people of their day were destined to be separated from God. And they did not like that. And they said, "Let's kill this man." So, you know, his person was so attractive, but his message was repulsive. They wanted to kill him. They go, "Oh, okay, that's good, okay." Number three, why was Christ called the Lamb of God? I said, now, unless you've had any old, have you ever had any Old Testament interest or study or anything? If not, I don't think you'd probably have the answer to this one. But have you had it? No, never have. Well, let me explain this one. I don't want to put them on the spot again. I say, let me explain this one. When in the Old Testament, there was the Jewish people had been under the Egyptian rule. And do you remember the plagues, the 10 plagues? Oh, yeah, they all seem to know about the 10 plagues. I said, well, that's when God's people were released from Egypt. And it was during that time that God said, now, as you leave Egypt, I want you to have a Passover meal. Have you ever heard of Passover? Most people say, yeah, I heard of Passover. And I said, well, you know what that was? They would take a little lamb. Every Jewish family, the night before they left, every Jewish family would just take a little lamb, a little animal, and it had to be a male and without blemish. Interesting. And they would have to kill that little lamb that night. Now, can you imagine little Levi when his dad said, Levi, go get that little sweet, pretty male lamb over there. And he goes, oh, that's my pet, Dad. We don't want to kill that one. There's this mean one with one eye and three legs that I hate. He bites all the time. Let's just kill him. No. We got to have the very, very, very best. Why? Because that's what God told us to do. And then you know what they do? They take that lamb and they literally would stick it in the neck, cut the artery, take the blood, put it in a basin, and they would actually then confess sins that came to their mind. And the idea was that that little lamb would pay for their sins by that death. But you know, John, that was never meant to mean that little lamb. It meant to be that there would be a lamb, a human lamb, that would come one day that would be God lamb too. And he would be the one. He was called Messiah, Deliverer. And that's why when John the Baptist saw him, he pointed at him and he says, behold, the Lamb of God that takes away the sins of the earth, of the world. That's why he's called the Lamb of God. And I'm telling you, I'll say that, and I've heard this over and over. They say, that is so cool. I have never known that. It's like it's putting stuff together for them now, all right? Passover, I heard Passover. So then I said, all right, let's jump to number four. What is the significance of Christ's words, destroy this temple, and in 3 days, I will raise it up. The guy I talked to last week, he said, that was the temple, the big temple in Jerusalem. I said, you know what? But think about this for just a minute. Destroy this temple, and in 3 days, I'll raise it up. What does that mean? And then he went, oh, was that Jesus talking about him? I said, yeah. And it's interesting, there was 3 days after he would die that he would rise again. He is prophesying his own resurrection. That's pretty cool, isn't it? Pretty neat. Number five, what did Jesus mean when he told Nicodemus he must be born again? This is going to be one of the support tools that you might now say, I don't have time to go. I got to just answer these questions. I got to get out of here. I don't have much time. So I would hold this off. Maybe you'll use it later. Maybe you won't. But this is going to be one of the support tools. When we get to support tools, I will have already covered this one. So I'll take away from our tomorrow morning's agenda, and I'll do it now. Again, you may not have time to do it, but I love using this one. I'll say, let me do a little fun little thing with you here, John. I'm going to give you three options to describe yourself, okay? As we come in, and I ask you this question, how would you answer this? The first would be, I am not a Christian. Secondly, I am a Christian. Or third, I am a born again Christian. I would like to know the last time I heard somebody I met with say they were born again. I don't ever hear people say that. It's rare that I hear somebody say it. I'll put that for sure. What do you think I hear 3/4 of the time? I am a Christian. Other 25%, I'm not a Christian. I love when they say I'm not. But most of them say, well, I'm a Christian, meaning I'm not Muslim, I'm not Jewish, I'm a Christian. That's kind of what they're thinking. I say, so you are a Christian, but you're not born again, right? They go, correct. I say, okay, imagine that your wife is wanting to be pregnant, and she thinks she might be, and so she goes to have a pregnancy test. She has 3 options in what she could tell you when she comes home. She could say, I am not pregnant. She could come home and say, I am pregnant. But what would you think if she said, well, I am semi-pregnant? I said, wouldn't you say, honey, I don't think you understand pregnancy. You're either pregnant or you're not. I said, it's very similar in this up here. Do you know that you're either a Christian, and if you're Christian, you are born again. And if you're born again, that's what makes you a Christian. Now, that's according to the Bible. But John, please know this. I understand why you might not have said this, that you're born again. Because there are a lot of wacko, crazy, weird, unattractive people who are calling themselves born again and doing very shameful things in the name of being born again. And it's a turnoff to me, and that's why we don't like that term. But I want us to just bring it back because Jesus used it when he said, you must be born again. And then please remember this right here. You don't have to remember all the stuff I'm saying. I'm just giving you kind of a feel for this thing. But please remember to say this. Say, you know what, John? I'm going to make a commitment to you. In book 4, in our last week together, it will be my job and I will make sure you know exactly what this means. Okay? That's my commitment to you. And I will, because it'll be very clear by the time they get through book 4. Number 6, what did Jesus say was necessary to have eternal life? Can some of you answer that question just without having read it just recently? What does he say? What's the word he uses? You must, in order to have eternal life? Huh? He does in another place. In this particular text, he doesn't use that phrase. One word. Believe. Key word. Now here you'll want to tell your friend this. John, do you know that in the English language, we have very few words to describe certain things that the original language of the New Testament, the Greek, has multiple words, and one of them is the word believe. Because we say believe, and that may mean I intellectually accept it, or it may mean I trust in something, or whatever. We use the same word believe. They had different words. This particular word, which by the way is the word pistuo, but it's the particular Greek word, means to put one's trust in. So I want to explain that, and I've got a great illustration. Many of you have heard it. The story is told. In fact, somebody just recently came up to me and told me the name of this tightrope walker. It's a true story. But he would walk over Niagara Falls, over a little portion of Niagara Falls. And coming back, crowds would gather and throw money in the hat and applaud him and so forth. He said, how many of you believe that I could replace my balancing beam? He pointed over to a wheelbarrow. How many think I could replace it with a wheelbarrow, go across, come back? All hands go up. They believe. So he does it. After he does it and comes back, then everybody's applauding. He says, now how many of you believe that I could put someone in that wheelbarrow, go across, and come back? And all the hands went up and said, ma'am, you raise your hand. Would you get in the wheelbarrow and we'll go do it? And she goes, no way, I'm not doing that. But I thought you said you believe. And she says, I believe, as she points up here at her head, but I don't believe, as she points to her heart. And I said, John, you know, in many respects, it's why some people have said, I think rightly, the difference between heaven and hell for all eternity, according to the Bible, is about an 18-inch gap right here. It's not what you just believe. That's important, but it has to be here. That's what this word means, okay? It's to trust in, to put one's trust in. Okay, John, you good? We've got just a couple more to go here. Let's hit them real quick. I say, all right, let's look at number 7. What is the significance of Christ's claim to be the Messiah? Have any idea there, John? John might say that he's God, and I go, perfect, you got it. His claim to be Messiah is he's God. And I'll say, John, you know what's so interesting to me? I've heard people say, you know, Jesus never claimed to be God. And I'll say, watch how many times in 4 books that you will see questions highlighted that will ask the question, this same question, and how many different ways he called himself God. This is just one of them. Next question is number 8. How did Jesus describe his relationship with the Father? And looky there, John, here's already one right here. I just said how he called himself God. What did he say his relationship with the Father was? And if he's read it, he goes, they're one. I say, yeah, and it's interesting. They're actually, he's claiming to be God once again. Last question, it's a yes or no question based on what Jesus would say. Can someone be in right relationship with God without being in right relationship with Christ? And the answer, John, and they always get this right, no. Now, I realize that they're probably not agreeing with that answer. Because this guy told me, he said, well, now, wait, what about Jewish people? That was his big concern. I got a lot of Jewish friends. Are you saying that all those Jewish people, that they're not okay with God? And I said, you know what, John? That's why we've got book two. And I said, that one is going to be covered top to bottom next week. And it's going to be the brain teaser of all of them. And I'm telling you, that's why I want to spend a lot of time tonight, because it's going to help you too, because a lot of us are asking the same questions. Why would God send someone to hell who never heard of Jesus? Explain this whole idea about good people, but they're just not good enough because they never heard of Jesus. They never got, wait, come on. So that's where we're going to go next week. And I know that. So I say, all right, read book two. And now again, I want to underscore, John, read a little bit every day, okay? Every single day. Good to go? He says, yeah. What'd you think about today? Was it beneficial? You sure you want to do book two? Oh, yeah, I want to do book two. I hear it all the time. Yeah, I want to do book two. Now, would you assume that I'm pretty good at doing this? You would assume that, and you should. I'm teaching the class. I shouldn't be teaching it if I weren't good at it. Do you think I was good at this the first time I did it? No. I've done this hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. But I'll tell you this, you get a little bit better every time you do it. And you begin to realize, oh, there are not all that many questions out there. We do a thing here for you that are outsiders. We do a thing here called IF, Investigative Forum, and I get up and take any question. And you know what? I never am concerned about taking questions from the floor. And this last week, we did a few weeks ago, and how can you explain that so-and-so, you know, was born, you know, with same-sex interests, and, you know, and then God's going to say no, even though he made the person that way, and the next person. What about my father who, maybe that was the time before, a father who was greatest man I ever know, and he'd say he's not a Christian the way you're talking, and what do you think happened to him? You're saying that because he was not a Christian, a good man, like best man I've ever met, that he's in hell while some godless, bad, wicked person right on the last hour really became a Christian and he goes to heaven forever? Is that what you're saying? I had a man ask me that. That man that I was eating lunch with last week asked me that question. I don't blink at that. You know why? Well, because I've heard it 1,000 times. You're going to see there's only 20 questions that come around, and we're going to cover most all of them before this weekend's over. So you're going to be in good shape. And if that one comes up you hadn't heard, what do you say? I don't know. And then you call anybody but me and find the answer. All right, let's take a break for about 12 minutes or so. Let's take a break and grab you something to drink, meet somebody new, and then we'll come back, get going.